Here we are now continuing on in our series of conversational expositions. I'm with Nate Wagner and David Wally. And we're considering now this section here at the end of Exodus chapter 22, starting at verse 21. Somebody read it for me.
It says, "You shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt."
This law kind of strikes me. Because really, this is a law of moral importance of how people treat one another. In some ways, it almost seems out of place with some of the other laws. But nevertheless, here it is, God telling Israel that it matters how they treat strangers. And I think you can say that a pretty good judge of a person's or of a culture's moral condition is how they treat strangers in their midst. How you treat the other, the person that's different than you.
Very easy to be standoffish, to be closed borders, to be, right. We got our own thing going, you stay over there.
We could say that the instinct of society, you know, kind of from ancient times, is to be very tribal, very blood-oriented, you know. It's our group that I'm going to take care of, and that's it. Everybody else, you know, they can die, I don't care. God commands against it.
Now, would you define stranger as those outside of Israel, or would it be even strangers within Israel that they didn't quite know? You know, I don't know you, Bob, or I don't know you, Doug, or...
Yeah,
how would you define stranger?
I think here it's speaking of the foreigner, the people who would come to Israel from the outside. You know, a good example of that would be like Ruth, the Moabite, right? And other people like that who would come. And the reason why I say that and stress that, you're not just talking about somebody from the tribe of Dan being friendly to somebody from the tribe of Naphtali. It's not so much that, but he's talking about, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. He's talking about that being a stranger in a foreign place.
Now, how do you reconcile that with God telling them to go and conquer the land, and yet in the same way, being kind to the strangers that you come across?
Well, now there's something important here, and we don't have the time to really consider it in fullness, but you know, it's worthy of probably a pretty good discussion around this table, is that the war of judgment that God appointed Israel to when they came and conquered Canaan was a unique war of judgment. And God was bringing well-deserved judgment upon the Canaanite peoples that was really kind of horrific. I mean, they were to be wiped out. But we don't question the right of God to do that. If God could judge Sodom and Gomorrah that way, he could judge the Canaanites that way. What is unusual about it was that he used Israel to do it. He used their sword. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. But no, that kind of puts off this idea of the presence of a corrupting influence that God wanted them, obviously, to keep their distance from.
So it was okay for the idea of Israel coming into the land and Canaan defending that land. That wasn't really what question is here. I mean, like the right, like you're talking about being kind to strangers, different things. I mean, Canaan had the right to look at this like, oh, wait, here's Israel's coming into my territory. I've got to defend my territory.
Well, yeah, I think you're kind of pushing on something that I think is really kind of relevant to verse 21 here. This command, you shall not mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt.
Yeah.
There are people who might make a direct application to this to immigration policy in the United States or any other particular nation. And I think the point that you're trying to bring out here is that we're not saying that this verse necessarily argues for an open borders policy, that there should be no restrictions on immigrations. It seems that, biblically speaking, God gives nations the right to say who comes in, who comes out. I mean, in ancient Egypt, the Israelites were specifically welcomed in. They didn't just invade. God never questioned the right of the Canaanites to try to defend themselves against the Israelites, but they were not able to, because God was with the Israelites. But what this does speak very powerfully to is the idea, when the stranger's in your midst, how are you going to treat them when they're there? I mean, I think a nation has the right to say, these people can come into our country, these people can't. You know, and they do it for all different reasons, and it might change from time to time or whatever. That's kind of a separate issue. But when they're in our midst, we need to be welcoming.
So it's kind of after the fact, regardless of how they came into your surrounding area and they came into your little zone, regardless of the entryway, they're there, and how you treat them with kindness.
Yeah, and I mean, if I could kind of spell it out even further, let's just say that there was somebody here. I mean, my wife's family is Swedish.
Right.
You know, and Swedes just can't come and live permanently in the U.S. And let's say that a Swedish relative of hers came in, was going to be deported or something like that. I mean, according to the principle in this law, it would be responsible for the people involved in the deportation of that person to treat them kindly. It's not open season on cruelty and hatred towards them, even if the law needs to be enforced against them.
So would this be a law that the judges would be ruling based on this law in a personal basis or in a more of a broader sense? If it's in all of the nation of Israel, or if it's personal, welcoming them into your house.
Yeah, it kind of seems that here these laws are shown to be not only for the judges of Israel, but that God wanted to communicate his heart to the people as well. I mean, we've been focusing, as we've been making our way through this, how these laws were for the judges of Israel, but I hope we haven't given anybody the idea that they were only for the judges of Israel. God's communicating the kind of God he is and the kind of heart he has
for people. So
really,
just a heart development for the whole people. Like, yeah, I want you to be kind. Remember, when you were in Egypt, you were a stranger. Yeah. Therefore, be kind to the stranger.
But again, working against that very deep part of man, and I'm going to call it part of fallen man, this idea where we're super tribal and super interested only in our own blood, and we don't transcend beyond that. God's saying, no, it's not to be that way among my people. And isn't this beautiful? Yes. Doesn't this show that even though God had a special role for Israel as Israel, his heart's for the whole world? Yeah. It's not like he said, oh, I care about Israel and let all the other nations perish. Yeah. He said, no, when you interact with the other nations, you need to do it in a way that demonstrates my love and my kindness.
Cool. It's almost like there's like the idea of no outsider in the kingdom of God. You know, there's really no outsider.
Yeah, you come in and you become, and people were invited to come in and become part of Israel. It wasn't a racial thing having to do with the Hebrew race.
Right.
It was a thing of the God of Israel. Mm-hmm. And anybody could be counted under Israel who came and embraced the God of Israel. Mm-hmm. Let's continue the next few verses because it's kind of the same on the theme. Nate, why don't you read it?
Verse 22, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way and they cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless.
Wow.
Man, that's...
I mean, that's really laying it out strong. And again, isn't it pretty obvious here that this wasn't just for the judges of Israel to read and understand, but them to understand what God expected of the people as a whole? And you know, the widow, the fatherless, I mean, what were they in the ancient world?
Those are the weakest.
Yes.
They're the ones that are vulnerable,
yes.
No protection. They're the ones that are open to being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. So those are just the disadvantaged.
You know, it's a pretty powerful command. I don't know how much explaining it needs on our part. I mean, I think we more just kind of marvel at it.
Yeah.
That God cares about how we treat the weakest and the most disadvantaged people among us. He doesn't want us to be a community where it's survival of the fittest.
Yeah. So incredible to think that, you know, again, you don't know exactly, but it would seem like Israel is set apart in this way. Like you mentioned the idea of this tribal mentality. You can, you know, survival of the fittest. Okay, here's an old guy. Let's get rid of him. He can't fight anymore. Let's just not worry about him. And God's like, no. These people, even the weak, I want you to care for, be tender toward. So much so that he would say something as gnarly as, my wrath will become hot.
I will kill you with the sword, as it says in verse 24. That's heavy. God cares about this passionately. His passion burns hot to see how we will treat the weak and the disadvantaged.
Hmm.
You know, one of the things we do in our own congregation, you know, we're still putting it in place and stuff, so we don't talk about it. We have a beautiful Sunday morning program for special needs kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, there's a lot of reasons why that's good, a lot of them. But one of the reasons, I think it's a real demonstration of love and care and concern to people that many in our society might regard as weak and disadvantaged. We say no. We love them. They're part of God's family. Come and be part. Okay, well then this is amazing section. Teaching about the heart of God.
Yeah.
We'll push the pause button here and pick it up in our next section.